He'll be speaking on his experiences from Georgia and Texas.
All right. Appreciate it, Tyson. Appreciate the introduction. So, like you said, I'm going to cover about half the material. I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Katie Lewis for sort of another perspective on not only geography when it comes to this stuff, but also discipline. She's a soil scientist, has done a lot of work in fertility and some of that area. So, sort of want to start off with, you know, we talk a lot about cover crop, the conservation tillage. In hindsight, this should have been reworded. So when I say true cover crop, we're talking about crops that we're planting just to be there for the primary crop the following season. We're not harvesting it. It's not like a wheat system. It's not, you know, shifting our rows over halfway and going in after cotton on cotton or cotton soybean, cotton corn, cotton sorghum rotation. This is more of a scenario where we're planting like a rye or some of those legume cover crops, and they're there to provide cover for the primary cash crop the following season. You know, we're aiming for a higher percentage of ground cover to see all these benefits. And all the work that we're going to talk about, or, you know, especially in Georgia, was that, you know, that rye cover system that we've seen take hold. So when we look at, you know, uses for cover crops, the whole background of how this started, it was, you know, really improving soil water status. And it's been proven over time that we do a pretty good job of that. Increases in soil moisture, water content, we've heard that, we've heard infiltration rates with the use of cover crops. We also see some benefits in plant growth, and this is cotton specifically. There's been several cases of a positive yield response with cover crops, and that's cover crops compared to not just conventional till, but other conservation tillage systems where we may have stubble there. When we put that cover crop down and leave it there, it's shown to be beneficial. I haven't really seen an effect on fiber quality, however. So I think one of the keys, and we talked a lot about different species already, and really the key is what we select as our cover. And if you look at, you know, work that's been done over the past several decades, there's a multitude of species that have been tested in terms of cover crops. And the selection of that species can be driven by a lot of different things. Obviously, the location of the environment can have a big impact, which species or species grow, perform better in those environments. The cost has been an issue with certain selections and availability as well. And does it fit into the system or the rotation that we're in? But when we talk about a cover crop that we're going to leave there for that benefit of soil moisture and some of these other things, you know, really it's all about how much biomass we can create. The more soil coverage we get, the more benefit we see on several of those things, not just the growth of the cotton and the yield, but several of the other things that Bill mentioned earlier about thrips and weeds, which we'll get into in a second. So when we look at the Southeast, rye has become pretty much the dominant choice for that kind of a system, for that true cover crop system, just because of that potential to produce so much biomass. So when we look at rye compared to other species, we're seeing that, you know, cotton performs better in that, and Dr. Bowery presents in that data as well. You know, it performs better, you know, in that rye system than it does several other cover crop systems or species. There's a lot of additional benefits too. And this is really taking that next step in terms of producers adopting a cover crop, particularly rye. Weed suppression, and of course we talk about weed suppression, we talk about cotton, we talk about the Southeast, we're talking about Palmer amaranth, 9 times out of 10. And that's, we're seeing a big benefit from that with that heavy rye biomass. Also, there's been documented reductions in thrips populations using that rye cover. And there's also root knot nematode reductions, which I missed that the first 17 times I read that paper somehow, and so that was, you know, an additional benefit that we're seeing from that rye cover. So Dr. Culpepper and University of Georgia has done a lot of work with the weed suppression side of using a rye cover. You know, and Palmer's become a problem across the cotton belt. And so anything we can do, you know, particularly with the loss of the ability to control with Roundup, anything we can do is going to be a benefit. And he's had a lot of success working with this rye cover. So, you know, the picture here on the left-hand side, the difference between that and the picture on the right is just the rye cover. That's the only thing that's there. And we see, you know, just visually how much reduction in palmer populations we're getting just for that cover crop. And really, sort of the mechanism behind that is that palmer seeds need sunlight to germinate. So if we can get that physical barrier between the seed and the sunlight, we can inhibit germination of the plants. Because really we're at a point where a zero tolerance for palmer. You know, one in the field is probably too much. So preventing it from even, you know, germinating is one of the safest ways to keep it out of our field. So this picture, I just want to point out, this is not photoshopped in any way. I did not mesh two pictures together. This is taken in Tifton. This is one of Philip Roberts' trials he has there. So we have rye cover on the right, conventional till. On the left is no cover. No bidron, no orthene is in spray, no insecticide. That's thrips injury on the left. You see, and the populations as well. I mean, the population difference between those two is extreme. But, you know, you can just see the amount of benefit we get from thrips injury with this rye cover. So in areas with heavy thrips populations, you know, this is a huge benefit to that. Now, obviously there's going to be some limitations with this. And if we look through a lot of those, and Bill touched on this just as well, you know, our yield effects vary. Often there's no effect of cotton yield grown in a cover crop versus conventional tillage. You know, we do see yield benefits sometimes in extreme conditions, the drought conditions, you know, especially over time. It was a long-term 5-year drought, I believe, that, you know, we were seeing consistent, you know, benefits from that. Or compared earlier, like I said, to other systems of conservation tillage, whether that be in stubble or also compared to no-till or conventional till. One thing that we saw in Georgia is this sort of lag period with plant growth, and I'll get to some of that data in a second. And, you know, sort of some anecdotal information is that we hear is that it takes several years. You know, once a producer starts this whole cover system, you know, and I'm speaking about the heavy rye system, he may not see a yield benefit in year 1, 2, or 3. It may take 4, 5, and 6 years for him to see the benefits in terms of the yield, even with benefits in soil moisture and other things. There's some other issues, and it's keeping the cover clean. One of the issues we had in South Georgia was you get ryegrass, and it's pretty difficult to kill ryegrass with some of the products that we're using to terminate the cover crop. I was actually at a meeting one time, and there was a brochure being passed around by a sponsoring retailer, and it was marketing ryegrass as a cover crop selection. They were selling ryegrass seed to use as a cover crop. And I think if you want to make a weed scientist cringe, plant ryegrass as a cover. That's you know, that's going to cause a serious problem. Also, growing conditions. You know, it's not all about the cotton growing conditions. We've got to get the rye up as well. The cover's got to, you know, be at that point where we get that high biomass. Low biomass levels are going to minimize our benefits. We also have seen that in years where we have very high precipitation levels, we're going to kind of get a wash. You're not going to get that benefit from your biomass because we've got so much moisture there anyway. So it's a year-to-year variability in how much benefit we get. So I'm going to cover some stuff from Georgia that was done a few years ago. It's not published, but it's covering sort of the rye study using the system that is in place for weed suppression and looking at potential water savings and cotton performance in that. So in this system, we're aiming to plant the rye mid-November. Obviously, we've got to get the cotton out of the field first. So we're planting the rye in that mid-November, early December range. Our seeding rate is 90 pounds an acre. We're applying an additional 20 to 30 units of nitrogen on the rye, and we go back and apply a little bit more on the cotton grown under the rye compared to conventional to account for some of that uptake. So Dr. Culpepper's crew has customized a drill that leaves a 12-inch gap every four rows. And so you've got 7.5-inch drill spacing, and then every fourth row is a 12-inch gap. And that allows us to go straight into that gap and plant cotton, and it kind of helps with some interference. Now, we can do it without the gap as well. It just is sort of an aid to get the cotton up and out of the ground. So that cover is rolled, and then we apply a burn down right behind the roller about 2 weeks before we go in and plant the cotton. So looking at some of these biomass numbers, we're going to talk about 2013 and 2014. So in 2013, you know, we had about 11,000 pounds per acre of biomass in that rye, and we had a little over 30 inches of rain during the season. So it was a very wet year in 2013. This is in a location in South Georgia. In 2014, we had about 15,000 pounds per acre of that rye biomass and about a little over 14 inches of rain. So as an aside, I'm not going to present too much of the irrigation treatments, but we were comparing different irrigation levels, and it was 100%, so fully irrigated all the way down to dry land. And so you can see that in 2013, we got more rain than we actually put on an irrigation in 2014. So that's just how wet a year it was. There were some additional large plot trials we did just to kind of show where biomass is at, so we can get a pretty good range. We had a large plot trial in Moultrie, Georgia, about 5,500 pounds per acre, and then an on-farm trial north, about an hour north of Tifton, and that was a little under 10,000 pounds an acre. So, you know, even our growers, we can get the biomass typically. You know, that's definitely a big part of the battle, is producing that much biomass, but we're usually, you know, decently successful in doing that. So we looked at soil moisture. Obviously, that's something that's been, you know, a key to this whole system in the past. Two depths, measured it weekly. A lot of times we didn't see a difference. And in particular, in 2013, you get that much rain, you're not going to see a big difference in soil moisture because it's just almost saturated all the time. A lot of things we did see, though, is we did see some increases during the season in the rye cover. We never saw the conventional above the rye cover during the season. Prior to the termination of the cover crop and directly after, we would see an increase in the fallow, so where the no cover is. And that kind of leads to some of the issues we have in other areas where we are getting some of that water dry down with these covers. And if we don't get that planting rain before we go in with our cotton, you know, we're going to be in a bit of an issue with the dry seed bed. So looking at heights, this is kind of going back to that lag period we talked about. So we measured heights at a five-week period, or five periods in 2013, starting at, you know, the start of square, and then four times during the bloom period. And visually you could see it, and even before the eight-leaf period, you could see that lag where the cover was. And it persisted throughout the season. And again, in 2013, it was a very wet year. And so our cotton growing on that rye cover never really caught back up with the conventional. It stayed shorter than the conventional all year. Look at 2014, which is maybe a more of an average year in terms of rainfall. We again saw early that our cotton in that conventional tillage started out taller. But we saw no differences by the time we got to bloom. And at 4 weeks after bloom, we actually had taller plants under the rye cover than we did in the conventional. But by the end of the season, there were no differences. So there may be something to that, you know, really wet year and that lag period in cotton growth when growing on that rye. Looking at lint yield, and I'm kind of glad I'm following Bill because he kind of set this up, talking about going in year one, not seeing a lot of effects. This is a small plot trial. We rotate every year. So we don't have rye on this field every single year back to back. We're rotating with two other systems under a linear irrigation pivot. So in 2013, again, wet year, taller cotton under conventional all year, and our yields were statistically higher under conventional than the rye. Come to 2014, again, more of an average year, and there was no difference. So, you know, our on-farm trials, I'll cover those real fast, we didn't see a difference there either. Again, we're always going in on year one of these fields, and I think that's a lot of the key, is establishing the system, staying with the system, what do you see over time? So, just to quickly summarize, you know, yield benefits, that's a double positive layer. Their benefits are typically positive, I guess, without saying. But we typically do see a yield increase with rye, but it's inconsistent. We rarely see a drop, even though we did in Georgia in that 1 year. Obviously, the growing conditions have a big impact. The wet year of 2013 obviously impacted cotton's performance under that rye cover compared to conventional. A key is we, you know, not only were we always going in on year one on these fields, but we never really had a harsh year. We had a really wet year. We never had a really dry year doing this. So, and I think that's the key too. And really, you know, Kay's getting ready to speak now. You know, we look at the Southeast challenges we have there. A lot of times, at least in our experiences, we're during the cotton season. You know, we didn't have a big issue getting the cover crop established, getting the cover crop up, and having that big biomass going in. But we would have challenges during the cotton growing season that didn't have an impact. We look at other places, particularly the High Plains, that may be totally different. We may have issues just getting the cover established and getting that biomass. And Paul mentioned he has a roller for sale. It's not a whole lot to roll most of the times in West Texas looking at cover. So I'm going to turn it over to Katie and let her cover that side of it.
Thank you, Seth. So as Paul alluded to, and Seth as well, things really are very different in Texas when it comes to cover crop use. Texas lags behind other states as far as their adoption rates. When we talk about tillage, we're at about 16%, or no tillage, we're at about 16% adoption rate. When it comes to cover crops, we're right at about 6% of our acres that are planted to cover crops. And a lot of this is due to those perceived limitations of cover crops and no tillage. But I really believe that through optimization of cover crops, getting that termination timing correct, that we can increase adoption, continue to educate farmers on the use and the benefits of those cover crops. So part of one of the projects that I've been included in right when I first started, and I feel very lucky as a soil scientist to have a project that's a long-term 18-year no-tillage study. The objective of this was to demonstrate and quantify the impacts of no-tillage or conservation tillage coupled with cover crops and look at the impacts on soil health parameters, soil carbon, soil water holding capacity, and then, of course, looking at the subsequent yield of cotton. This is one of three locations that was funded through an NRCS project. Our location is located in La Mesa, Texas. Paul covered some of the data that we've been collecting from the Chillicothe area. And then we have a third location down in the Gulf Coast area. So we're really covering the main environmental regions, ecoregions within Texas. This project, we're looking at three different treatments: conventional tillage, no tillage with a rye cover, and no till with a mixed cover. The conventional till and no till with rye cover have been in place since 1998. The mixed cover, as Paul mentioned, part of the mixed cover push by NRCS, was seeded for the first time in 2014. And we're looking at the impacts of these three different treatments on, as I mentioned, organic carbon, soil health parameters, the water holding capacity of these soils, and then cotton yield. These are large system plots. So we have demonstration plots that are 200 feet long by 16 rows wide. They're replicated three times. We are under a pivot at this location. This last year, we planted our cover crops November 4th in 2015, which is a really good time in Texas. We were lucky to get our cotton out by then. This year, we were much later, about a month behind that. But weather, can't really help the weather, so we make the best with what we can. The cover crops were planted November 4th. We chemically terminated on March 10th. And then came back in on May 25th and planted our cotton, which was harvested on November 22nd. So moving on to the results. So Full organic carbon really controls our physical, our chemical, and our biological parameters of the soil. So if we can improve organic carbon, we're likely going to see an improvement in some of those other parameters, nutrient cycling, water holding capacity, just that structure. And hopefully with an increase in organic carbon, we're going to reduce sand blowing, as Paul mentioned, because of an increase or improvement in soil structure. So remember, this is an 18-year study. What we are seeing an increase in organic carbon in the 0 to 6 inch depth. Lost my mouse. But look at how low our organic carbon levels are. We have nearly doubled, close to doubled our organic carbon levels, but we're still at about 0.4% organic carbon. So 18 years, and it's taken us that long to increase by about 0.2% units. And then when we go deeper into that soil profile, 6 to 24 inches, we're not seeing any changes at all, which is slightly surprising to me. About 90% of our sequestered or stored soil carbon is from roots. And so if that's the case, then why aren't we seeing that increase in organic carbon deeper in that profile? For cover crop herbage mass, we definitely can't produce the biomass that Seth was talking about. In 2015, with no-till rye, we produced about 3,000 pounds dry matter per acre. In both years, 2015 and 16, the no-till has produced less biomass, less cover, compared to that single species rye. And in 2015 growing season, we definitely had less biomass produced simply because we got in there, we seeded a whole lot later than we did this year. Looking at lint yields, very inconsistent. I mentioned that this was started in 1998. Wayne Keeling had a big part in this back when it first was initiated. And visiting with him, yields have been consistent since the very beginning. We haven't seen a consistent trend as far as increasing yields, decreasing yields, since the very beginning. This year, what we saw, 2016, we did see greater lint yield with the conventional tillage compared to the rye no-till. There was no difference between the conventional and the mixed no-till plots. And we normally would connect this to a reduction in stored soil water, but we'll look at that here in a second. And at planting, we didn't have as large of a deficit as what one might think due to rainfall in May. And so based on this data, I would say that maybe we are we're having greater nitrogen immobilization with that rye cover compared to the mixed cover where we do have legumes. So here's the stored soil moisture from 2015 to current. So we'll start in 2015. We terminated our cover crop March 26. Prior to that termination, we did see a deficit in stored soil moisture. However, once we got some rainfall, those levels do start to even out a bit, and we replenish the moisture in the no-till cover crop plot. But when we planted that cotton, we didn't see the deficit that we would normally expect. And then moving on to 2016, we seeded our cover crops November 4th, as I mentioned. Prior to that cover crop termination, there was quite a large deficit. The blue bar, or the blue line, is conventional till, the red is no-till rye, and the green line is no-till mix. So right here, in this area, you can see we did have a deficit of stored soil moisture at that point in time. But early May was a wet month for us. We had about 4 inches of rainfall. And so, of course, as soon as we got those rainfall events, that stored soil moisture was replenished and we were good at planting. And then throughout the growing season, it stays fairly similar between those different treatments. And the next slide is that early part of that figure. And I like to show this simply because I have rainfall precipitation values down here at the bottom. And it's nice to see one of the benefits that we know goes along with cover crops is that we do increase infiltration. We do increase the water holding capacities of our soil. So prior to termination here early on, we did have a deficit where we had those cover crops planted. But we start getting rainfall, and those quickly start to even out and replenish in those no-till plots. So in summary, 18 years, we have managed to double our organic carbon, or nearly double. But remember that that is a very small increase. It's going from 0.2% organic carbon in the conventional till plots to, on average, 0.4% organic carbon, averaging the rye and the mixed cover. And even though we are seeing these increases, we're not seeing that reflected by cotton yield. We're not seeing any sort of consistent trend, but I think through optimizing, like I mentioned earlier, optimizing termination timing, water management, we can improve that. And I feel very strongly that the soil health promoting practices definitely need to have a more regional focus. What we do here can't be the same thing that's done in the eastern part of the United States. Semi-arid regions definitely have to be managed differently. And whether or not that's because of water, possibly nutrient cycling, mainly nitrogen, I think we have to have different goals, different focuses, and different management strategies.